The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues for the next half hour. I'll be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter and other publications. I apologize that my voice is rather hoarse. First, from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter of December 2023, is an article entitled, Aspirin May Raise Anemia Risk. Taking an aspirin daily can come with plenty of benefits, including reduced risk of blood clots that can cause heart attacks and strokes. But the drug carries some serious risks, including bleeding. A recent study revealed that another related risk, developing anemia, may be more common than previously known. The study, published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, included more than 18,000 older adults. The participants didn't have anemia at the start of the trial and were given either a daily aspirin or a placebo. They were tested yearly for hemoglobin, a protein in red blood cells important in carrying oxygen through the body, and ferritin, a protein that stores iron. Low hemoglobin means having a low red blood cell count or anemia. Low ferritin means having an iron deficiency, which is the most common cause of anemia. Those who took aspirin had about a 20% higher risk of developing anemia during the study period. Further, people taking aspirin had an 11.5% greater drop in ferritin compared with those taking the placebo. The higher risk of anemia and low ferritin remained present regardless of any major bleeding event. Mayo Clinic experts say the results don't change the recommendation of taking a daily aspirin if you've had a heart attack or stroke or coronary bypass surgery or if you have an artificial heart valve. The results support the 2022 guideline for older adults not to take daily aspirin to prevent heart disease if they have no symptoms and have not been diagnosed with a condition for which aspirin may be indicated. The study does reinforce the need to get your blood tested at least yearly for hemoglobin and ferritin if you are age 65 or older and take a daily aspirin. If it's not recognized or managed, anemia can lead to exhaustion, irregular heart rhythms, and even death. Now here's another article from News and Our Views. Diet changes yield benefits for hard-to-treat asthma. Being overweight with asthma makes managing the lung condition more challenging. You're more likely to have flare-ups or exacerbations, and these wheezing, coughing fits may require hospitalization. A recent small study in the journal Chest found that a strict diet with subsequent weight loss may lead to better control of asthma symptoms. Researchers looked at people with hard-to-treat asthma who are also living with obesity, defined as a body mass index of 30 or greater. All participants received standard asthma care, including modification of any treatments as needed, and were given an opportunity for weight management advice. Half of the participants also entered a program where they followed a restricted, low-calorie diet of shakes and soups for 12 weeks, followed by a careful reintroduction of a low-calorie regular diet for the rest of a one-year period. The diet group lost significant weight over 4 months, an average of 30 pounds. The other group had a mean loss of 3 pounds. More than half of those in the diet group significantly improved their asthma control questionnaire scores versus about 20% with improvement in the control group. Mayo Clinic experts say that the new findings reinforce the important role of weight loss in treating asthma in people with elevated BMI. This study may point to an effective way to achieve that weight loss, but it remains to be seen whether participants in the study maintain their weight loss and improved asthma control over longer periods. Now, again from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter of December 2023, here's an interesting article about breast cancer gene changes. You may think about breast cancer as something that runs in family, but the truth is that more often than not, people diagnosed with breast cancer have no family history of it. And it's estimated that only about 5 to 10% of breast cancers are associated with gene changes, sometimes called mutations or pathogenic variants that are passed through generations. But knowing you have one of these gene changes can be very valuable information. You may be advised to undergo additional or enhanced cancer screening. You also may be able to take measures like lifestyle changes, medications, or even risk-reducing surgery to help lower the risk of cancer. Breast cancer gene 1, BRCA1, and breast cancer gene 2, BRCA2, are the most common genes associated with breast cancer. Both also significantly increase the risk of some other cancers. But a number of other genes can affect breast cancer risk, and experts make different recommendations for cancer screening and risk reduction depending on the affected gene. When to test. Your healthcare team may recommend genetic testing for gene changes if you have a strong family history of breast cancer or certain other cancers like ovarian, prostate, and pancreatic cancer, or if you have a family member who had genetic testing and learned of a breast or ovarian cancer gene change, you've been diagnosed with breast cancer or certain other cancers, some factors like Ashkenazi Jewish ancestry and breast cancer history at a young age puts you at a higher risk of a gene change. Testing typically requires a sample of your blood or saliva or a cheek swab. The Food and Drug Administration has approved select direct-to-consumer genetic tests that look for a few BRCA gene changes. These tests do not examine all possible BRCA changes and do not include the other known genes that may affect breast cancer risk. This means direct-to-consumer genetic testing is not comprehensive or complete. For those reasons, consider asking your healthcare team for a referral to a genetic counselor. A genetic counselor can discuss the benefits, risks, and limitations of genetic testing. The counselor also can help prepare you for the results of the tests and provide a clear explanation of the results. All of the genes listed in the table above, and they list a number of genes in this table, have cancer risks that are inherited in an autosomal dominant manner. Meaning that if you have one of these genes, it's enough to manifest the trait. And if one parent has the gene change, a child has a 50% chance of inheriting the same gene change. Remember, not everyone who has a change in one of these genes develops cancer. And even if no gene changes are found, this does not guarantee that you will not develop cancer. If it turns out you have a genetic change that increases your risk of breast cancer, You are not powerless. There are measures you can take to more vigilantly screen for cancer and even reduce your breast cancer risk. But it goes on to say that one measure is enhanced screening. Women at average risk of breast cancer are advised to have a mammogram at regular intervals. When to begin this screening and at what intervals to have it should be a joint decision between you and your healthcare team. If you have a breast cancer-related genetic change, you may be advised to also have one or more of the following exams, alternating every 6 to 12 months. And these are breast tomosynthesis, also known as a 3D mammogram. This is now the standard mammographic screening in most health settings, but not all facilities have the technology. Breast MRI and clinical breast exam. If your gene change increases the risk of other cancers, you may be advised to undergo earlier or enhanced screening or take other steps to protect yourself from those cancers. For example, some people have the PALB2 genetic change, and they may be advised to get screening for pancreatic cancer. You can't control your genes, but you might be able to mitigate breast cancer risk through your actions. Try to exercise regularly. Aim for at least 150 minutes of moderately intense activity or 75 minutes of vigorously intense activity a week. Maintain a healthy weight. For postmenopausal women, carrying excess weight is a risk factor for breast cancer. Limit your alcohol intake. Aim for one drink or less a day, as alcohol consumption is linked to an increased breast cancer risk. In certain cases, you may be a candidate for drugs that decrease breast cancer risk. These are known as preventative or risk-reducing medications. Preventative medications include tamoxifen, raloxifene or Avista, anastrozole or Arimidex, and exemestane or Aromycin. For some people with gene changes, the cancer risk is so high that they may choose to have their healthy breast or ovary surgically removed to reduce the risk. These surgeries include bilateral mastectomy. That's a surgery to remove both breasts. For some people, it can decrease breast cancer risk by 90% or more. Bilateral risk-reducing salpingo-oophorectomy. This is surgery to remove both fallopian tubes and both ovaries. This surgery can significantly decrease this surgery can significantly decrease ovarian cancer risk and may decrease breast cancer risk. All right, now I'm going to go on to the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, a supplement from October of 2023, and this is entitled Transient Ischemic Attack, or TIA, a mini stroke with major implications. Without much warning, your world stops. You're blind in one eye. You're too dizzy to stand. You try to form words, but they come out slurred. Then the symptoms mostly disappear as quickly as they came. The rapid recovery is a tremendous relief, but shouldn't be viewed as an all clear. If you find yourself or a loved one in this situation, call for emergency medical help immediately. The symptoms indicate that you've had a TIA, or transient ischemic attack, which is a temporary interruption of blood flow to part of the brain. You might have even had a minor stroke. A TIA is sometimes called a mini stroke because it produces some of the same symptoms as a stroke. It typically lasts only a short time. The short time can be minutes, a few hours, or on and off for a day. Unlike a stroke, a TIA may not damage brain cells and doesn't cause permanent disability, but it's a warning sign that you're at high risk of a full-blown stroke and require immediate medical attention. A major study found that about 30% of people who have TIAs later have strokes. The stroke can happen within days or months, but most commonly occurs a little more than a year later. A TIA provides an opportunity for you to take steps to prevent a stroke. Risk rises with age and unhealthy habits. A TIA happens for much the same reason as an ischemic stroke, the most common type of stroke. In an ischemic stroke, a blood clot blocks the blood supply to part of the brain long enough to cause damage. In a TIA, the blockage is brief, and there may be no damage to brain cells. The underlying cause often is atherosclerosis, a condition marked by a buildup of cholesterol-containing fatty deposits called plaques. This buildup can occur in the carotid artery or one of its branches, which supply oxygen and nutrients to the brain. Plaques can decrease the blood flow through an artery or lead to the development of a clot. A blood clot moving from another part of the body, most commonly from the heart, to an artery that supplies the brain also may cause a TIA. This is a common scenario associated with atrial fibrillation, a heart rhythm irregularity, which can cause blood to clot in the heart if not treated with appropriate blood thinning medication. You may have more than one TIA, and the recurrent symptoms may be similar or different, depending on which area of the brain is involved. Your risk of having TIAs or strokes increases as you get older. They most commonly happen to people in their early 70s. You're also at higher risk of a TIA or stroke has happened to one of your family members, or if you're Black. And if you've had a TIA, your risk of stroke is higher, whether it happens days, months, or years later. Chronic conditions that affect your cardiovascular health also increase your risk. Examples include high blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, high cholesterol, carotid artery or peripheral artery disease, obstructive sleep apnea, and sickle cell disease. Being at an unhealthy weight, not exercising regularly, and smoking or drinking heavily are additional risk factors. A TIA is always a medical emergency because it's difficult to distinguish a TIA from a stroke. Initially, your blood pressure will likely be checked. You'll likely be asked to blink, smile, or grimace, and squeeze hands or lift your arms and legs. You also may be checked for vision disturbance, any loss of sensation, and your ability to read out loud. Persistent symptoms in these areas are usually a sign that some brain tissue damage has occurred. A healthcare professional may use a stethoscope to listen to the carotid artery in your neck. A whooshing sound may indicate atherosclerosis. An instrument called an ophthalmoscope may be used to look for cholesterol fragments or platelet fragments or small clots called emboli in the tiny blood vessels at the back of the eye. Other tests may include computerized tomography, CT, or computerized tomography angiography, CTA, scanning. CT scanning uses X-ray beams to assemble a 3D look at the brain or evaluate the arteries of the neck and brain. CTA scanning uses X-rays similar to a standard CT scan, but also involves injection of a contrast material into the bloodstream. Then there's magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI. This procedure, which uses a strong magnetic field, also can generate a 3D view of the brain. MRA uses technology similar to MRI to evaluate the arteries in the neck and the brain, but may include an injection of contrast material into a blood vessel. Carotid ultrasonography. A wand-like device called a transducer sends high-frequency sound waves into the neck. After the sound waves pass through the tissue and bounce back, a doctor can analyze images on a screen to look for narrowing or clotting in the carotid arteries. Echocardiography. With a type of traditional echocardiography called transthoracic echocardiography, a transducer is moved across the chest. The transducer emits sounds that bounce off different parts of the heart, creating an ultrasound image. Another version that may be used is transesophageal echocardiography. During a TEE, a probe with a built-in transducer is placed in the esophagus. This allows a better view of blood clots that might not be seen with a TTE. Preventing future stroke. Changes in how TIAs are managed have resulted in dramatically lower rates of stroke over time. The goal of treatment is to ease blood flow and fix what caused the disruption in the first place. Treatment includes antiplatelet drugs. Platelets are a type of blood cell that normally clumps together to stop bleeding. Sometimes they can form a clot that causes a TIA. Antiplatelet medications help prevent new clots from forming. Examples include aspirin, clopidogrel or Plavix, and ticagrelor or Brilinta. Commonly, low-dose aspirin may be prescribed along with another antiplatelet drug to be taken together for at least 3 weeks after TIA. Anticoagulants. These drugs help reduce blood clots as well, but affect the clotting system proteins instead of platelet function. Anticoagulants are usually prescribed if you have atrial fibrillation. Warfarin is a commonly prescribed anticoagulant, but it requires close monitoring to strike the precise balance between avoiding blood clots and excessive bleeding. Newer anticoagulants like dabigatran, Pradaxa, rivaroxaban or Xarelto, and apixaban or Eliquis work just as well but don't require such close monitoring, nor do they require the dietary restrictions that are needed with warfarin, but they're generally a lot more expensive. Then there's surgery. If the carotid artery is moderately or severely narrowed, your doctor may suggest a procedure called carotid endarterectomy to clear the blood vessel of fatty deposits and other debris and to improve blood flow. Another option is carotid angioplasty, otherwise known as stenting. Then, of course, there's risk factor management. Another important and ongoing part of treatment is managing underlying conditions that increase your stroke risk. This may mean taking drugs to control high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or diabetes. It also involves taking good care of yourself by exercising, not smoking, eating a nutritious diet, maintaining a healthy weight, and drinking alcohol in moderation, if at all. Together, these measures can help to reduce your risk of stroke. And then finally, very briefly, here's a second opinion from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. I've known two people who had heart attacks recently while they were sick, one with COVID-19 and the other with flu. Are these infections that hard on the body? It's probably not a coincidence. The COVID-19 pandemic was an all too real reminder that viral infections, including the influenza and respiratory syncytial virus, can cause serious health problems and can even be deadly. In addition to causing lung problems and general sickness, these infections also unleash an assault on the cardiovascular system. Several studies have shown that some upper respiratory infections, including COVID-19, flu, and RSV, increase the risk of cardiovascular events like heart attacks by 12% to 15%. This risk may even be higher with certain infections or in people at higher risk of heart problems. This includes those who have one or more risk factors for heart disease, like diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, unhealthy cholesterol levels, or liver disease. For those who have gotten available vaccines, the risk of infection and subsequent heart trouble drops. In people with cardiovascular risk factors, full COVID-19 vaccination is associated with a 41% reduction in major heart events from COVID-19 infection. Even partial vaccination is associated with a 24% reduced risk. Again, I apologize for my hoarse voice. It looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.